Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to your favorite hour of the week. It's the Arrowhead Pride Preview Podcast, this time on Tuesday with the short week game coming at you Thursday night, the Oakland Raiders Thursday night football. I'm here, Pete Sweeney, with the player, Sean Barber, and the blog father, Joel Thorman. Guys, Chiefs coming off their first loss of the season. Tell me something good. Give me some good news. Sean, anything? What do you got?
Tell me something good. Boom, 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 boom. It's a short week, so it doesn't take a long time to get back on the winning side of things. That's a good thing.
Right, quick turnaround.
They've still beaten Brady, Wentz, Rivers, Cousins. They've beaten a lot of really good quarterbacks still. So big picture, it's all right.
I don't know if any of us expected them to go undefeated. Of course, getting that.
Speak for yourself.
Of course, getting that first loss against the Pittsburgh Steelers, 19-13, tough game at Arrowhead Stadium. Now, focusing in on this game, Sean, what did you learn about the Chiefs in their loss against the Steelers?
I learned that we're going to have to tighten up the run defense, no matter what the first five games looked like. Eventually, our run defense needs to be shored up for us to go further than we than we expect as far as going in deep into the playoffs, Super Bowl, all those things. You have to be able to stop the run.
The Chiefs' offense can lay an egg. I thought that they were almost past a performance like that just because they had so many weapons. You know, if you shut down Tyreek, then you go to Kelsey. If you shut down Kelsey, you go to Kareem Hunt. The Steelers really did a good job against all of them. So the Chiefs aren't past that. They're still capable of games like this.
Yeah, for me, it wasn't as much what you learned about the Chiefs in the game, but it's more about, to me, what the Chiefs can learn about themselves. And right now I'm going to read a quote from a great philosopher, Rocky Balboa. Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it'll beat you to your knees and keep you permanently there if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit, it's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. Sean, that's how winning is done.
Man, you are killing me with this Rocky Balboa stuff, man. But it's true, though. It's true. Everybody takes a licking. You got to keep on ticking. You got to get back up. You got to dust yourself off. Our run defense took a hit. But I think, you know, if you listen to
Rocky Balboa.
No. If you listen to DJ and you listen to Marcus Peters, you listen to the amount of pride they have in our defense, it's almost a given that they're going to come back and counterpunch this week against the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, if there was some sort of counterpunch when it comes to personnel that the Raiders are doing right now, I mean, they're at 2-4. Out of nowhere, they get Navarro Bowman. What was your reaction when they signed Bowman?
It makes a ton of sense. It's one of those rare midseason moves that all the fans were calling for that the team actually agreed with, and they went out and did it. The Raiders needed a lot of defensive help. I'm skeptical how much it'll help, you know, 5 days later when they play the Chiefs, or 3 days later, whatever it is.
Like that for the Raiders, Sean?
A little bit overpriced. I don't know if I would give a guy with that much tread off his tires $3 million for pretty much two-thirds of the season on a one-year deal. They probably could have negotiated a little bit better to be more just really, really incentive laced.
Well, they said that he had a trip planned to Dallas as well. But
that's
it was
what they said.
They, you know them. They yeah. said it. That he had a trip to Dallas planned as well, and they kept him in Oakland, and maybe that's why they ended up overpaying, because they were in a situation where they didn't want him to leave the building without a deal. And that's, if you go back to the Andy Reid story, a lot of people said that's exactly what happened to get Andy Reid in Kansas City.
Well, that's exactly how I got to Kansas City. My agent scheduled a flight for me to go to the St. Louis Rams and the Tennessee Titans once I came here for my first free agent visit.
And what happened? Can you tell us?
Carl Peterson wouldn't let me out of the building.
Really?
Yeah, they wouldn't set up the car service to take me to the airport. So him and my agent basically
literally wouldn't let you out of the building.
Hey, he ain't talking about kidnapping, modern day kidnapping. He had my agent on the phone. He's like, "Hey, what we got to do to get this deal done?" He's like, "Well, Sean's supposed to be in. He's supposed to be on a flight to go to St. Louis right now. So let's get him to the airport, and then we can talk about it later." He's like, "Well, we'll handle that. Let's talk about this deal while he's headed to the airport." And the whole time I was just at Arrowhead being toured around, took to dinner and this and this. They never planned on letting me get on that, getting that car service.
It's a good strategy.
When I joined Arrowhead Pride, Joel wouldn't let me leave his house. He said, "You're not leaving this house till you join Arrowhead Pride."
Stayed there for a week.
And that's why I quit the Chiefs. I mean, he locked me in. Anyway, so Let's go to the injury roundup. There's a lot of injuries to talk about. First thing I want to mention is Chris Conley is in good spirits. We saw a photo of him yesterday, I believe, with the ruptured Achilles surgery. It seems like he's in good spirits, said that he's in line for a major comeback, so you hope to see him at the beginning of 2018, somewhere along those lines. Albert Wilson, still a little bit of a question mark, and Matt Nagy, who is the offensive coordinator for the Chiefs, had a quote this week on, you know, what the Chiefs really missed in Albert Wilson.
Albert's a big part of this offense, and not just for what he does mentally and just knowing where to be in all different formations and plays, but emotionally as well and with all his energy. You know, he's a spark plug, and so he's one of our leaders right now. We got a young group of wide receivers that are out there, and he's been here now for a while, and he's able to lead the group. So anytime you lose a guy like Albert, it definitely hurts you. But with that said, we have, again, the belief and confidence that we have in these other guys is sky high. And Albert was there on the sideline, you know, rooting them on, helping them out with different things and on the bench. So it hurts to not have him out there, but that's just the way it goes, and we got to move on.
You know, talked to Pete Sweeney last year, and he would have said, oh, the Chiefs are without Albert Wilson. I don't care. Pete Sweeney this year is like, you know what? They really missed him, especially with Conley out last game.
Yeah, it was a drive late in the game, and Marcus Kemp was out there. DeAnthony Thomas was making plays for you, and that was when it really hit me. Like, whoa, they're really short on receivers. I found it interesting this week that they cut Kemp to bring C.J. Spiller. So does that mean Albert Wilson's coming back? I don't know. He missed
practice on Monday, yeah.
It's on a short week. That's definitely a little concerning, but we'll see. Today's the day they're actually going to practice on Tuesday. So,
Sean, is Albert Wilson the most underrated Chiefs player?
Definitely on offense. I always kind of consider him the X factor. He's that little missing link that you don't account for that makes two or three really big plays throughout the game to kind of really turn that momentum to the Chiefs side. When it comes to game planning, Andy has done a great job of really finding a little niche for him to kind of fit in, whether it's the shovel pass, third down drag routes, a deep over route. He kind of hides a little bit between that deep coverage and that underneath coverage, and he just finds that nice little soft spot in your zones to kind of make himself present when you need a big first down. So I kind of expect, you know, DeAnthony Thomas will have to step up in that role. That's going to be kind of that niche role that he needs to step up in.
What a 2017 question. Is Albert Wilson the most underrated Chief? That question would have been laughed at last year. And then now I'm like, I think he is, actually.
Yeah, it's crazy. And you could tell last game, they really did miss him. And I think it was, for me, the rapport with Alex Smith, it seems that he's really been in sync with Alex Smith since the beginning of the year. And you saw that DeMarcus Robinson wasn't really completely in sync. And we'll get into more of that a little bit later. Let's stick with injuries right now. Kareem and Akeem Hunt should be the 1-2 running backs this week. Sharkhandrick West, of course, has that concussion because of that Mike Mitchell helmet-to-helmet hit, the first of two bad plays from Mike Mitchell in that game. So Kareem and Akeem are the guys. And then your number three, you mentioned it already, C.J. Spiller back for the fourth time with the Chiefs.
Yeah, we'll see what he can actually do this time. Maybe he gets on the field, but he's a veteran, so you sign him presumably to play and not ride the bench. So I'm expecting to see him this week.
Sean?
Yeah, kind of like, you know, when the Arizona Cardinals got AP. I mean, you get a veteran running back because you expect that he's going to be in shape.
So you're expecting the 26 carries for like 120 yards.
Two touchdowns, yeah, exactly.
Anything less than 150 is a disappointment this week.
Yeah, I mean, high expectations, baby.
All right, let's talk game storylines. Thursday night football, the world will be watching. Raider week, is it a little less exciting because the Raiders stink this year?
Yes, I think it is. I looked at the schedule before the season, and I thought this was going to be the best game of the year. The game of the year.
It was last Thursday night football when they played. It was one of the better games last year.
It was at Arrowhead, and I just thought with the Chiefs having won the division, going to Oakland, the Raiders are going to be treating this like their Super Bowl. I thought there was a chance that they could both be, you know, 5-1 or, you know, 6-0 entering this game. Yeah, so it has taken a little bit out of it, but you know, once Thursday night gets here, I'm sure we'll forget about that.
On a personal level, Raider week is Raider week. I wouldn't care if neither team had any wins. You have opportunity to beat down the Raiders, you do it. Gain all the energy, lick your wounds, whatever you got to do. Tape it up, strap it up. Buddy tape your fingers together when I'm broke. You do whatever you got to do to get ready for Raider week, and it's Raider week.
Like a true Marty player right there.
I think for me, I'm still pretty fired up, given the fact that it's the Raiders, and I just don't like Jack Del Rio's face, very punchable face, as you would refer to the movies. But I think the idea that it's on Thursday night, I'm just like not a big Thursday night football fan because it's just a different brand of football. Like the Chiefs are only practicing once this week. They don't have the same amount of time to game plan for this game as they would. And I know there's been some good Thursday nighters this year. The Carolina Panthers, Philadelphia Eagles game comes to mind. But at the same time, it just, for me, you know, it's just a different brand of football. Like other weeks, they may have Sharkhandrick West, when maybe this week they definitely won't. So I don't know. I don't love Thursday night football.
It seems way more unpredictable and not in a good way.
Right.
Like the injury factor, is obviously huge. And it just, like, they always seem like they're weirder games and not like, you know, the way the Chiefs would normally.
People are banged, like they feel banged up. You know, you've been there before. If you had to play on Thursday night, how would have that impacted you back in your playing days?
You must not have heard what I just said. Wrap it up, tape it up, do what you have to do. It's Raider week. You practice, you prepare to play. They don't care if it's a short day, 3 days. If we had the chance to play, we played on Sunday night, and somebody said, hey, because of the schedule, we have to turn around on Tuesday and play the Raiders. Everybody in the locker room said, let's go. Let's go, like it's Raider week. Let's go.
Now, it seems, at least in these days, that rivalry aspect to it is a little bit less. Is that just because of the players on the teams, or why do you think that is?
Well, I think on a national media, you know, Denver has been really good in our division. So it's kind of been us in Denver. So people on a national level probably have kind of forgotten about the Raiders a little bit. Derek Carr last year had a great year, and then the end of the year he gets hurt and they kind of, you know, go down the tube. So I think nationally everybody's kind of like the same old Raiders. But here in Kansas City, as far as me as an alumni player, I can't wait for Raider week. I can't wait to just talk about the Raiders, talk down about them. I can't wait for the team to beat them. If it's at the end of the game, we're up by 20, we have a chance to score, I'm hoping we can score a touchdown. Don't want no running back kneeling at the one-yard line. No, I want to score as many points, embarrass them as much as you can on national TV.
I just don't think you have, like, back in the day, Marty made Raider week a thing.
Because he talked
about it publicly.
If you look at the Chiefs' history, it really mattered to Lamar.
Yeah.
Too.
And they were good at it. They beat them a lot. And now we're kind of back in this heyday again, and they're back to beating the Raiders a lot. But Andy Reid is a lot more polite about it, I guess. You know, he doesn't quite take the shots that maybe Marty did, and, you know, has a little bit of a different focus. I think that's part of it.
For me, it's a little bit too. It's more of an important game, I think, at this stage for the Raiders, just because all of a sudden, you know, this team had high hopes. They're about to get their fifth loss. The Chiefs, coming off their first loss. Now, I think a big question and a big storyline into this game is, you know, how will they respond after their first loss?
I mean, we're about to find out. I have no idea. I just really don't know what to expect. My gut tells me veteran team, veteran coach, you know, they've been preparing for this throughout the season, getting a little ahead, knowing the short week is coming, and I think that they're going to play well. But again, Thursday night, who the hell knows?
Good or bad that it's this quick of a turnaround off the loss?
I think after a loss, you don't worry about the time frame to get ready for that next game. I think that you look at it as not so much a detriment being it's a short week, but the positive is going to be a long week after.
Right.
So you just, everybody gear up and go. Go as much as you can, as hard as you can. If you can't go, tap out, let the next person go. Shoot all your weapons, shoot all your ammo. Let's get through the game with a win at all costs. Whatever you got to put up, chips in, get the win, and then you get a long week into that next game. So that's the way I would look at it as a player.
And a 6-1 record will be much more enjoyable than 5-2.
Yes, sir.
For a blogger, it's very good, the Thursday night, I think, because I did not want to write about anything with that Steelers game. There was just no, like, really good, even interesting, you know, Chiefs storylines coming out other than same old thing. Raiders, you know, beat them up the same way that they did before. And we should go back, listen to last week's podcast, and I think we all basically predicted what would happen there with Bell having a huge game. And I think I even said 8 for 150 for Antonio Brown. That's what he got. We knew it was coming.
None of us could have predicted Andy Reid going for it on fourth down. I think once that happened and they didn't get it, it made things a little bit more urgent. It made things that remained at a two-score game instead of the one-score game. I thought that was a killer. And I know hindsight's 20/20. They get the touchdown. You know, we're all thrilled about the call. So it's a tough position to be in. But, man, I just think that put things in the wrong direction.
Go for it. Go for it. Don't go for it. When you're a player on the team, man, you don't blink at stuff like that, man. You're so, like, whatever you call it, drinking the Kool-Aid or whatever. Hey, man, Andy's puts us in great positions to make plays. He calls great plays. that fourth down and two, we had somebody open, had the opportunity to catch it. They made it, you know.
Yeah, I think my thing was a two-score game. So, like, you needed the field goal anyway. That was my whole thing. I know they still talk on the broadcast, you know, about the book, the quote-unquote book. I just don't see how the book could have said to go for it on that play.
Because you haven't moved the ball at all that game. You're 4 yards away from the end zone. So, you know, you don't have enough faith in your offense that you're going to go back and get into the end zone again. And you're only 4 yards away, 2 yards from a first down. So I always try to remember what I felt in the moment. And in the moment, I thought, they've been playing so bad offensively that they have to go for it here to give themselves a chance.
In the moment for me, I was on the other side. Regardless, they still had a chance to win the game. A little bit of bad luck at the end where Philip Gaines really could have had an interception. Terrible luck off the face mask into the hands of Antonio Brown.
You got to hate it when that ball hits you directly between the eyes.
With that, we'll go to commercial break. When we come back, we'll get into the X's and the O's. It's Thursday Night Football. It's Raider Week. Get excited and stay with us. Welcome back to the Arrowhead Pride podcast. It's the Chiefs and the Raiders AFC West matchup, Thursday Night Football. Jim Nance and once again our boy Tony Romo on the call. National game. I'm going to start with you, Sean. How do you believe the Chiefs will respond after what was a bad offensive game?
Like I said, I think the veteran leadership in the locker room, I think Andy does a great job of preparation, especially on a short week. He doesn't game plan the offense to really attack the weaknesses of any individual team. It's kind of one of these things, we do what we do, and we're going to do it so well that it doesn't really matter what you do on defense. And that's a perfect compliment to Coach Sutton, because his defense is the same way. We don't move Peters around and take away your best receiver. We play defense, and then we expect everybody to play their position.
The Chiefs are going to be the Chiefs no matter what.
We're going to be the Chiefs no matter what. And when you come to short weeks, that really benefits your team because everybody knows their job. They know what to do, and you're not trying to do the gimmick plays or some gimmick game planning just to beat a certain team.
I'd like to see some more of that gimmick stuff. You know, I remember, I think it was just last year that Jack Del Rio kind of gave a backhanded compliment to Alex Smith and said, you know, he can be successful when he does all that gimmicky stuff.
Yeah, and obviously bothers them.
Yeah, no, and so if that's the first thing, you know, he's taken out of the game, I would be running so much pre-snap motion, moving guys around, putting Kelsey in the backfield. Like, I would gimmick it up big time, and I hope that Big Red's going to do that. But, you know, like you said, with the short week, that's kind of tougher to implement that stuff.
The Steelers had the Chiefs out of sync last game. Alex Smith said a number of times, just could not get in a rhythm in the first half, especially only 6 yards of offense in the first half. I think one of the keys in this game is going to be to come down the field on that first drive and at least get some kind of points either from our guy buttkicker.com or get in the end zone, because then I think it kind of gives you a message in your head, okay, this isn't last week anymore.
Yeah, the Raiders defense, if you look at them, I mean, they're there. They line up and they play defense. They just try to come off the ball and beat you up, and they want to make it a 4-yard dust fight, a backyard brawl type thing. So that works to Andy Reid's offense, because when we shift in motion, you have to kind of foretell your responsibilities very early.
Sure.
The Steelers defense was kind of a morphing amoeba type defense where the safeties are at the line of scrimmage, dropping to a deep third, dropping to a deep half.
A lot of different looks.
And so sometimes it caused a little bit of hesitation of a blocking scheme here and there. And sometimes, like you're saying, when it's tough to get into a rhythm, it's because you're not really sure. Are you seeing a 4-3, a true 3-4, 5-2?
And your skill positions were different in that game. The offensive line wasn't your starting offensive line. So I think it might have been kind of a perfect storm type of situation.
Yeah, and I thought the Steelers did a good job of coming up with a Chiefs game plan, which is kind of the opposite of the Chiefs, who usually do what they do. I thought it was really effective. They went back to, you know, pressuring Alex Smith and, yeah, giving them a ton of different looks so that the Chiefs never could. Like, it wasn't until the fourth quarter on a couple of those drives where I felt they got into a rhythm. So they went an entire half with doing nothing offensively.
Yeah, one of the tough things that I noticed as well is, you know, Chris Conley wasn't there. Albert Wilson wasn't there. So DeMarcus Robinson really was in a big position. I mentioned it a little bit earlier. You didn't really see DeMarcus Robinson and Alex Smith didn't really have a good connection in the game. And Matt Nagy was asked about that this week.
Couple plays in there that you'll see where not just DeMarcus, but for in general, guys are they may look open, but in regards to how the play is designed and where Alex's eyes are supposed to go, to everybody upstairs, and may like, oh no, you know, he missed them, one of those type of deals. But there's I think what you're going to see with DeMarcus and Alex, to answer your question, is as these games go by here, and we just get more and more practices and games together. Those guys I'm talking about, I think you're going to see that relationship between the two of them on the football field really grow. And I think that DeMarcus just having, you know, to go out there and get lined up and see the speed of the game and then understand timing with Alex. You saw at the end of the game there, he had a big catch to get a first down. I think you're going to start to see more of that.
When we talk about the Chiefs offense, if you kind of watch what the Eagles are doing, that third wideout position that Nelson Aguilar is doing, if you look at the tight end in the third wideout position, the progress and the amount of success that position is having kind of dictates whether the offense goes or not. It's a lot of things that they do with that third wideout position and your starting tight end, this complementary routes, that there's really no way to defend it. So when we talk about getting ready for this last game, I mean, who was the third wideout? We had Robinson bumping up to be number two. Hill was number one. So that made who was our number three?
Seemed like D'Anthony Thomas.
Run that.
That or number 19, right? So we had kind of an unproven number three until late in the game they found D'Anthony Thomas, that number three wideout. And that's the position where I think that the Chiefs really need to use that position to attack the Oakland Raiders defense.
Well, that was an interesting game for me for D'Anthony because the Chiefs needed that touchdown bad. And where he got it on the field, he kind of needed to make it happen. And he stepped up in a big spot. And the only reason the Chiefs really had a chance at the end of that game was the play D'Anthony Thomas made because, again, and you know, I mean, it might be the reason they went for it. You saw the offense couldn't do anything all day. That was a big boost, you know, late in the game that almost led them to a victory.
Yes, I'm still a D'Anthony Thomas believer. You know, I still think put him in the right spots and he can contribute.
The pound for pound toughest player on the team.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's quick enough, obviously, in Andy Reid's offense that he can have some plays for him. He can have some packages and be useful. He's probably not best served as a 35-snap receiver like he was last week, but, you know, that's what the Chiefs had to do with those injuries.
Again, we realize if Dave Tobe says it, it's gospel.
Yeah.
Dave Tobe, he crowned him as the toughest pound-for-pound player he's ever – it's gospel. We got to start taking it, right? Death, taxes, and Dave Tobe.
Dave Tobe, another supporter of Akeem Hunt, who will now get a RB2 role for the first time this year, probably on Thursday. How do we feel about Akeem, not the dream, in a RB2 role going into this week?
I just don't know enough about him. He doesn't look as explosive on the kick returns, but you're comparing him to D'Anthony Thomas and Tyreek Hill, so that's a little unfair. And I also wonder how much it's going to be him or it's going to be C.J. Spiller this week. Like how much trust they actually have in Akeem, who's been here for last 4 weeks, 3 weeks, or something like that.
He's been getting a few plays in the offense these past couple of games, but I know what you mean. I feel like C.J. Spiller may have a better grasp of the playbook. What do you feel about that, Sean?
Well, I think Akeem, his benefit is his top end speed. He's a guy you can put out in a wide receiver role, and he can run a go route and get past. I mean, almost is a matchup nightmare versus any linebacker or safety. And that's a position where you look at the Raiders, you know, especially if they're actually thinking about playing Navarre Bowman, their linebackers are very limited as far as their coverage ability. And that's what people have been taking advantage of them game after game after game. Tight ends, your third wideouts, that slot position has been kind of just exposing them as far as their secondary, as far as being a weakness. So whoever is that third down running back, whether it's, you know, Kareem Hunt, Akeem Hunt, or C.J. Spiller, take advantage of that matchup. It's going to be a matchup nightmare.
So big day for Kelsey.
Yes, sir.
That's what I heard out of that.
Travis Kelsey does need another rebound game. Didn't have a great game against Pittsburgh Steelers. Had that one drop that I remember stuck out to me. Kareem Hunt, actually, for the first time, could not really get it going on the ground. He did still end up getting 100 yards from scrimmage. Again, he is the only player in NFL history who, in his first six games, get 100 yards from scrimmage in each game. That's amazing. But what were the Steelers doing to Kareem to stop him on the ground?
Penetration. The D-line was just taking gaps, penetrating, getting deep in the backfield, making him make a cut before he was ready. And that takes away a lot of the elusiveness, the downhill. He's an amazing runner getting downhill. He gets downhill faster than anybody else and is able to make lateral cuts. But when you have to make those cuts or think about making those moves before you even get the ball in your hand, it changes your whole profile, changes your whole demeanor as a running back. And then just the rush attempts, the way the game was just unfolding, we kind of went away from the run a little bit and started to rely more on the pass. And that, you know, that's not really focusing on Keem's strengths.
Yeah, I think after getting only 6 yards in the entire first half, it changed the personality of the offense quite a bit. And Kareem wasn't getting the attempts. And you saw that's exactly what happened to the Steelers the week before. Le'Veon Bell only had 15 attempts. This game, double that. He had 32, and that's why he was so successful.
Yeah, and I found it interesting on Kareem Hunt. I saw, you know, Pro Football Focus tracked him at 29 yards after contact, but just 21 yards total for the game.
Yeah.
You know, so that just showed exactly what Sean said, that they were getting in the backfield really quickly, and a lot of those plays, you just had no choice. And I come out of that game, I didn't think, you know, they should have given the ball to Kareem Hunt more. Just that wasn't working, you know?
Yeah, and another point to it is on this offensive line, we really haven't noticed it the past few weeks because the Chiefs have been winning. But when you have a loss like that, you finally do notice it. The Chiefs are missing Mitch Morse and Laurent Duvernay-Tardif.
And, you noticed it on the safety. Two penalties for Cam Irving. You know, Morse started practicing last week, so maybe this is the week for him. LDT, I doubt it if he just started practicing this week. So we'll see. I bet we're still, you know, we still might be a couple weeks away.
I feel like after the safety from Zach Fulton, if you're Mitch Morse, you know, you kind of get on your horse on your way back. If you were close, I think now you maybe even try to push it a little bit, because it's abundantly clear now they're missing you, because that was a little bit of a game changer too. It just was a weird start to the Chiefs offense.
Yeah, Morse is pretty underrated, especially in that, you know, the Chiefs screen game, which I think against the Raiders has historically been pretty successful.
All right, now let's turn the page to the Raiders defense, and here was Matt Nagy on the Oakland Raiders.
To start off, you know, you have Khalil Mack 52, and then you have Irvin 51 there on the edges, and those are high motor guys that are very experienced at what, you know, in that defense and what they do there. So on the back end, again, they got a couple safeties there. They fly around. They're physical. They played a really good game yesterday versus LA, and it was a physical game. They were really stout against the run. It was, I mean, as you see, coming down to the last 3 seconds of the game, the kick a field goal to win for LA. It was a close game, and so they've been in some battles, and they're being tested right now, and you know, they're going to have a short week just like us. So it's just a matter of making sure that let's just focus on what we do and prepare as best as we can for their defense. But really, let's focus on what we do so that we can go out there, execute, and play fast.
Another team that gets to the quarterback, Khalil Mack leading the way with 4 sacks. You got Mario Edwards with 3. Bruce Irvin, who Nagy mentioned, with 2 right behind him. Another tough matchup for the Chiefs O-line, Sean.
Yeah, the one thing if you listen to what Nagy said, the most important thing for the Chiefs offense to do is just do what we do. And I think you can't say that enough. You can't, especially in the short week. You just want to really narrow that game plan down and say, hey guys, this is what we're going to do going into the game. Nothing different. We're just going to focus to get a little bit more detailed, stay on our blocks a little bit longer, make sure we are, you know, at the right point of contact, right leverage on our blockers. And let's just move guys out the way. Let's create some seams for Hunt. Let's get the running game going. After the running game gets going, play action pass comes along that. And then that's when you see Kelsey and our number 3 wide receiver start taking big chunks down the field. And then when everybody's playing those, you can hit the outside corner. So it's a progression of how this offense takes advantage of a defense, quarter by quarter, play by play. Each play sets up another play. And like I said, last game that kind of got out of hand because the safety was a real weird beginning to the game. It kind of threw everything out of whack. And we didn't get back on page until late in the fourth quarter. And you saw plays started being made.
So the Raiders pass rushers concern me, especially the last few weeks with the way the Chiefs line has played. I think there's, you know, they have the attitude of we're going to do what we're going to do, but without, you know, Sharkhandrick West, probably your best pass blocking back, and I saw Kareem Hunt get leveled a couple of times in pass pro last week. Man, I would be looking at what you're doing offensively to make sure you're protected, because Alex has been taking plenty of hits. We know the Raiders are coming, especially Khalil Mack. Like, he's going to get his this game. So I think you need to focus, you know, a lot of attention to making sure Alex stays clean.
For what it's worth, I think Kareem Hunt has been pretty good as far as pass blocking before last game, but he's had a lot of other highlights that you'd be watching instead of his pass protection in previous weeks. I think he might have just had a bad game. And because the Chiefs had a bad game, these videos are all over Twitter, and there was a little bit of buzz this week. Oh, Kareem Hunt can't block for the passer. And yes, while Sharkhandrick West is good at that, I don't know if you necessarily want to write Kareem Hunt off.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's writing him off. You know, they did bring West in some of those passing situations because you also don't want Kareem Hunt at this stage taking 60 snaps a game.
Right.
And that gave him a little bit of a breather. And I'm not sure if you get that as much now, because after West went out, all, you know, pretty much all those duties went to Kareem Hunt. So I think it's as much benching his snaps and the hits he takes throughout the entire season.
Some other notes in listening to the Raiders press conferences, I do expect Navarro Bowman to play. They said they haven't ruled him out, but he was already practicing in Oakland yesterday. So, if they had him on the field already, he's going to be juiced up. I think you want that energy, especially when you're 2-4. A former Chief Sean Smith was actually benched this past weekend for Travis Carey against the Chargers. Sean, that surprise you?
Not at all. I mean, Sean Smith, even when he left here, I mean, he was kind of on the downcline of his career. His play, his skill level on the field, productivity on the field was all kind of declining. And he tried to go out to Oakland and kind of revive his career. I mean, he did a good job a year ago, and now this year is kind of reverted back to the old Sean Smith. He hesitates on his breaks. He's accessible to the double move. I mean, he's kind of a liability when he's out there on the field. So, I mean, I would love to see him out on the field against our team. So I'm hoping he plays, actually.
Some other names to watch, Reggie Nelson, David Amerson. You know, decent secondary. I think their front seven is, again, pretty good. It's kind of a theme for the Chiefs this year. They're playing all these teams with good front sevens. Final word going into this for the Chiefs offense, Sean.
I mean, you just have to highlight Khalil Mack. You have to make sure that you don't let him get started off, you know, first quarter, second quarter, multiple sack game, you know, really putting Alex Smith on his heels and making him worry and hear kind of, you start feeling ghosts and seeing things. And then in the secondary, you said it, Reggie Nelson. Reggie Nelson's a guy who's been playing at a Pro Bowl level for the Cincinnati Bengals before he went to the Oakland Raiders. He still is a very effective free safety. He's able to move back there, show you some coverage, then take a half of the field away, comes up to blitz a little bit, and back into a deep third. Very, very mobile, a very active safety. Kind of reminds us, like, again, of what we did with Barry, what we do with our safeties. So, I mean, those are the two players that I think that you really have to be on the watch. The interior of this Oakland defense is where we should attack. The interior, the line, the middle linebackers, even with Navarro Bowman. Linebackers are linebackers. We can come in and play on any team. If you put me out there, I can figure out what's the open gap I'm responsible for. It's not like an offensive player when it comes to alignment, assignment, being responsible for this pass protection. That's a little bit tougher to kind of get up to speed. But when you're talking about defenders, I mean, defense is defense. If you played long enough, you played in every different style, it's easy to get adjusted and play right away on the defense side of the ball.
Well, there you go.
Did you hear him drop that he could come back today?
Well, we'll get into that a little bit later.
That's the truth.
We call it a little tease. Stay with us. Now let's turn the page to the other side of the football. It's the Oakland offense, number 30 in the league, based upon yards per game, versus the Chiefs defense, number 29 in the league based upon yards per game. So, you know, two of the worst units in the league draw each other in this game. The Chiefs have had recent success against the Raiders, winning 7 of the last 8 games. So Bob Sutton, the defensive coordinator for the Chiefs, was asked about that this week.
I mean, you know, I think, you know, obviously, you know, they're, you learn them, you play them in your division, you know, all that stuff, but they know us too. You know, I think we just, you know, this is a good team. I mean, they have the kind of the same kind of balanced deal that we're talking about. They got some really talented receivers. The tight end has added a dimension to them. Marshawn's added that kind of nasty power running, you know, that he does, you know. So they're a good thing. And, you know, and Carr is playing, you know, I mean, I think over the last couple of years, probably as well as anybody has, you know, he does a great job staying out of trouble, gets rid of the ball, helps his linemen, keeps the sticks at least neutral, you know, gets rid of the ball, does not get sacked very often at all. And so, you know, they create these certain things, and what you got to do, you just got to play really well. You got to get off the field on third down, and you, again, because he's willing to drop that ball off, which I think is important, you got to do a great job of securing a tackle. You know, that's a big part of it. You know, they got some guys that can catch and run and do a good job. And, you know, he's got a nice, you know, we always thought he had a great ability to throw the ball deep because he's got a great touch and he can drop it in and all that stuff. But I wish there was a secret that I could, I wouldn't share it with you anyways if I knew it, but I would just say that, you know, we try to play them hard. We understand, you know, what we're trying to do, and that's important. And we know that we got to keep these plays down. You know, we can't let them have easy plays, and that's a big part of it.
I mean, are we sticking to this theme of Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree just having big games and the Chiefs just having to manage that?
they're not Antonio Brown, but yeah, there has been kind of the trend that the opposite side of Peters, or in the case of one week on Peters' side, that the receiver on that side does pretty well. That'll continue a little bit this week, but no one's going to break off and ruin the game, I think, the way that Antonio Brown did last week.
I think you see the same Chiefs defense. I mean, that bend don't break. Raiders probably get a lot of yardage between the 20s. Somewhere in the red zone, the defense will step up, make a play. Big sack, you know, Chris Jones or one of our guys would just come in and make a big play to stop the momentum, and we'll hold them to, you know, field goal opportunities. That's kind of our motto right now. But Sutton, I mean, he's a great defensive mind, and what he realizes is that his personnel plays best when they are disciplined and when they're aggressive. And so he doesn't ask them to do a lot of things outside of their comfort level. I mean, it's a you know, do your job type defense. No Superman mentalities. No, we don't need a – we don't need Peters to help anybody else. You play your position, play your job. Safeties, when you're in the box, you're a linebacker. Be a linebacker that down. When you're in a deep third, be a safety. It's kind of one of those mind your own business type defenses. And as a defender, I think most guys really, they love that. They love being able to kind of know what they're responsible for before the game, and no one's asked to do anything more than that.
One of the big differences in the Raiders personnel this year is, of course, Marshawn Lynch. I think everyone nationally really knows that about the Raiders. Bob Sutton talks about whether or not Lynch is the same player he was just 2 years ago this week.
He's the same guy. You know, he runs hard, and he's a contact runner. He loves contact. He's gonna seek you out to some degree in here and go. And you know, like always we say about Marshawn, you know, he's underrated as far as his ability to do those inline cuts and the things that he does so well. And what happens is he gets to run through, you know, like we call it soft shoulders. You know, you end up overrunning him. You end up on that outside and you're reaching back in. And, you know, with his size and strength, this isn't a guy you can tackle like that. So you gotta stay inside out, and you gotta get good contact on him. And then you gotta get feet moving on contact. If you hit this guy, I don't care how hard you hit him, if your feet aren't rolling, you know, they're not moving, it's going to be hard. And of course, you know, like all great backs, you don't want to be involved in a lot of single tackles. You know, you want multiple people there, and you want that. That's a big part of this whole thing, you know, as you get ready for playing a guy like Marshawn. I mean, you need your whole defense. You know, when you want to take care of these guys, man, it's like we say, hey, it's every player, every play. We need everybody involved, you know. And you may think you're not needed, but in about a half a second of that thing bounces out or cuts back, we need you, you know. And that's why you got to assume every time, hey, I'm a critical guy in helping get this guy under control here.
Now, the interesting thing about Lynch is I think people thought he would have a better season than he's having. He had the great first week, 18 rushes for 76 yards, has struggled since then, but had an okay game, 13 carries for 63 last game. Does Lynch become scarier given what Bell did last week, though?
I mean, I think we knew some of the, you know, it's almost the Antonio Brown factor, same thing. Like, you're just not going to face another guy that good. So, yeah, we knew the run defense was a problem. You know, I think Marshawn could have a decent day, but by no means do I see him going for 180 or completely taking over the game. You know, he's the type of back where I would be concerned if the Raiders got a lead and they actually stuck to him, you know, consistently.
To grind out the game.
Yeah, grind out the game type. But, you know, the Raiders pass the ball enough that I think it kind of be tough to get him into a rhythm, but we'll see. I mean, the Chiefs run defense has not been good lately.
We saw more Ragland and less Murray versus the Steelers. Is the Chiefs run defense a big cause for concern?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, when you look at these two running backs, what we faced a week ago and what we're facing now, you have that it's kind of a matrix, power to patience. And Bell is an extreme patience guy. And then he turns it on to power when he gets into your second, third level. Marshawn Lynch is just the opposite.
Right,
he's hitting the hole hard. He's not, if whether it's open or not, he's going to bury his head, try to run over somebody. Not the most patient runner. And I think that kind of leads to what we play defense the best against. We can meet power with power. And what Bell did last week, he exploited some of our your run gap responsibility, because you want to get to the ball so bad. Sometimes you void your gap to get to the ball, not realizing that that's what Bell was waiting for, to take advantage of that gap now being voided. Marshawn is a completely different runner. He goes power, power, power. And I think we have the front that can combat that and play really, really well against that type of running back.
Now, Derek Carr in the offense just hasn't been the same this year. you know, it's not what a lot of people predicted. One of the best things about Carr is he doesn't turn the ball over, and he usually doesn't take sacks. Last year, the entire year, he had only 6 interceptions and 16 sacks. This year already, we're only entering the 6th game, 9 sacks and already 4 interceptions. What do you guys think has been different in Derek Carr?
The offensive line doesn't seem as perfect as they were last year. Maybe that's just from a couple of the games from the Raiders that I've seen this year, but I think that's certainly part of it. Last year seemed, I mean, they were just playing at such a high level that even a little bit of a drop-off, I think you tend to see, you know, it's a different year. Not everybody can be Alex Smith and throw 5 picks a year.
Yeah, I think Derek Carr, I think his back was hurt way before that he let anybody know.
Yeah.
And I think he's been kind of playing through a little bit of pain, playing through a little bit of lack of mobility. And if you look at, you know, a year ago, his mobility allowed him to escape a lot of the would-be sacks.
Yep.
His mobility allowed them to go down, you know, second, third level. It was hard to stay with Crabtree and Amari Cooper, you know, over 3 or 4 seconds late in the down, late, you know, after coverage had broken down, he'll find somebody. And now without that mobility, he's not able to do that same thing. So it's leading to more forcing the ball into tighter windows for more interceptions. It's leading to him taking more sacks. And I still don't think he's healthy now. So, you know, smell some blood in the water, let the sharks go, get them, bring that pressure early and often.
Sean wants to see EJ Manuel.
I mean, let's also consider that Derek Carr wasn't as good as last year, you know, made him out to be, which I think is very much a possibility that he's going to be a very good quarterback and not, you know, an elite quarterback.
What are you talking about? Andy Reid said he wanted him at the Pro Bowl, remember?
Yeah, no, I mean, maybe that's right. Maybe that's right. But I just feel like we catapulted him into like top 5 quarterback status and, you know, he hasn't played a playoff game yet.
It's true. Overall thoughts, Sean, I'll give you the final word on this Chiefs secondary against these weapons of the Raiders.
Oh, man. Grudgingly, I still point to the same highlight, the same elephant in the room is Gaines. He has to play better. For our defense to play better, because of the style of defense we play, you know what you're going to see. You know where he's going to line up. You know that by going to slot formation, you're going to get him on a certain – if you go 3 wides, you're going to get him on a certain person. You move your number one into the slot formation against a spread offense, you're going to get gains on him. And so it's – when he's not playing up to par, our defense becomes very average because you can attack that position and you know who's going to line up against him. You can get your best guy on our third best corner. So he just has to answer the bell. If you want to put, he has to pick up his play. He has to answer the bell. He has to be accountable for his position, his role in this defense. And if not, then, I mean, eventually you have to find somebody that can do it.
And don't headbutt the football.
Yeah, that's a good one.
All right. Well, we talked about the X's and O's, the storylines for this game. When we come back, we'll have one of your favorite segments. We'll read your tweets. We'll give some predictions. It'll be fun. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Arrowhead Pride podcast. We are talking Thursday night football. It's the Chiefs traveling to Oakland to play the Raiders. Sean Barber here, Joel Thorman there, Pete Sweeney here, and we have Seth Kaiser on the line for predictions for this game. Sean, as usual, we're going to start with you.
All right. I'm going to go get detailed for you. It's going to be a combined field goal frenzy. I see a combined 9 field goals being made between the two teams. The Chiefs go 5 for 5. The Raiders go 4 for 4. Both teams get 2 touchdowns during the game. Chiefs win 29-26.
I'll go 30-26, the Chiefs. It's kind of a weird, unpredictable week with the Thursday night game. I don't really know what to expect, so I'll stick with Vegas, who says this is a 3.5-point line, and I'll go 30-26, Chiefs.
All right, I'm going to go with a good old-fashioned 21-14 win for the Chiefs. I just think that the Chiefs are a better team than the Raiders. As much as I want to pick the Raiders at home because they really need the win, they're getting some juice from Navarro Bowman, I just think the Chiefs are a better team, and I think they're able to manage 3 touchdowns, and I just don't believe in the Oakland offense right now, so I give them 14 points, 21-14 in favor of the Chiefs. Big Seth doing big things, come in hot.
I've had a chance to review the All-22 from the Steelers game a couple times now. I don't think the Raiders are capable of doing what the Steelers did to the Chiefs defensively. They don't have the discipline. They don't play the same scheme. The Steelers are basically the kryptonite for Alex Smith in that they're the only team I see where his pre-snap reads are consistently wrong. And the Raiders just aren't capable of doing that to him. So I think the offense gets back on track because that Oakland defense isn't good. Like Joel said, anything can happen on a Thursday night game. Sunday looked familiar.
and it spooked me. But as leery as I am, I'm going to go with the Chiefs getting back on track offensively and winning 31-17.
So there you have it. Despite the loss, everyone picking the Chiefs once again. All right, Seth. Well, thank you for joining us for predictions. As always, any advice for us heading out?
Oh, man, I forgot to consider this. When an officer tells you to just step out of the car because they just want to talk and work out the situation, they're lying. They're looking for a reason to arrest you.
Good to know. All right, well, good.
You're welcome.
The more you know on the Arrowhead Pride podcast. All right, Seth, enjoy the game this weekend.
You guys too.
Seth Kaiser joining us, four guys picking the Chiefs. And now we'll get to the next part of our program where we read your tweets. Sean, you ready for some of these?
I'm ready now.
All right, here we go. This one from Sage Conrick at Slim Sagey. That's a nice Twitter handle, Sage. Very nice. When do you think we'll get our O-line back to full health, Sean?
Oh, Lord. After this game, the long break after Thursday night game allow everybody to kind of regroup. It's kind of like an early bye week. You get an extra two or three days of rest, and I think that going into week eight, starting offensive line will be back.
Yeah, I think week eight versus Denver. Maybe you see Morse this weekend. If not, they're both back to practice this week. So the long break, week eight, Monday Night Football against Denver.
I agree with you guys that the full offensive line will be back then. I'm going to add a little wrinkle to my boy Slim Sagey's question. How does Parker Anger fit into all this, if at all?
I mean, he doesn't. Clearly, I think, you know, he started last year, but they haven't played him since. They've had opportunities to play him, and they haven't. So I'm reading into it what it is.
I think you earn your depth level, your position on the depth chart in preseason. And obviously during the preseason, he just didn't earn a spot. He hasn't earned that trust level to be able to go in there and be a swing man. So he's kind of just on an emergency only type basis. If we go down two or three linemen, then he gets to go in there. But other than that, they'll make moves around him to keep other guys in there.
All right. Well, next tweet, Wade at Goodwin WM1 at Goodwin WM1. Interested in the difference between home and away games. Seems like Chiefs lay eggs in home games more often than the past few years. Am I wrong?
Well, don't they have a long road streak going, like 7 or 8 wins in a row? I mean, I think there maybe is a little something to that, but it probably has more to do with playing the Steelers twice in the last two home games that they've lost than anything else. So
they had a couple weird home games last year where they lost to bad teams as well. It just seems like they were caught off guard at Arrowhead.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, they're like 26-3 in the last 29 games and the three losses against the Steelers. I mean, I think this is the fact that they had to play the Steelers a few times here, and we don't match up well against the Steelers. What the Steelers do offensively, defensively, we just don't match up well against that. So I think that's that kind of.
I got the numbers on it since 2015, 13-6 at home, 15-6 away. So you're only wrong in the sense that there hasn't been really an advantage at home. I think that's the only, I mean, because 6-6, you know, as far as losses go, doesn't matter.
Yeah, I heard somebody say, is there really a home field advantage in the NFL? I think it was something like when they added everything up going into week six, it was like 45-46 was the win-loss record of every team home and away. So it's just like, is there really a home field advantage?
All right, Michael Cohen at Dr. Cohen, got to cover the elephant in the room, DJ. Has he lost a step?
Sure seems like it to me. I know Sean's probably more of the expert on this, considering DJ basically replaced him. But he sure does seem like he lost a step, and it's less me like noticing it and saying, hey, DJ looks slower there, and it's more like, hey, we used to be good for like 5 plays a game where DJ's bursting through the line and tackling the guy by the shoestrings 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and I just don't see that as often anymore.
It's fundamental football. I mean, he just has to do a better job of wrapping up. He's getting to the point of contact. He's making the right reads. It's just once he gets to that point, a lot of time he's dipping his shoulder. He's just doing glancing blows, these big shots. And, I mean, young running backs just have great balance. You know, and Le'Veon Bell has good balance. So you can't submarine a guy who is so elusive to take his legs away and get back on his feet and continue to exploit those holes. So, like I said, Beast Mode, coming this week is not going to be a detriment, but if we do play more those elusive type backs, our entire team has to do a better job of wrapping up, not just DJ.
Now, my eyes aren't as good as Sean's, but I've been here now since 2014, and he definitely looks to me a step slower this year. Even that being said, you have to keep in mind, is DJ a step slower, still better than a lot of middle linebackers in the league? And I would tend to think that is true as well. So I don't know. But I don't know if it's necessarily an elephant in the room, because I don't know if you'd really want somebody else at the moment and who that would be. And then you get into a lot of other questions.
And he's still pretty good in coverage.
Agreed. Todd Lutz at Chiefs Lutz 11. What's the status of Tamba Hali? So I'll explain this quickly just to pace upon the rules. And then if you guys want to weigh in about what you think the Chiefs will do, that's another thing. But now that six games have passed, the Chiefs have 5 weeks to activate Tamba Hali. Once they do, the Chiefs have 3 weeks to put him on the active roster. And if they don't, he is done for the year. As far as whether or not you think the Chiefs will activate him, I'll turn to you guys.
Yes, I do think they will. I don't think it'll be like this week. I could see them doing this like the final month of the season. I think the Steelers and James Harrison were actually a pretty good example for this. James Harrison didn't play that much. He's been inactive the last few weeks. They brought him in the fourth quarter of the Chiefs game, and what do you know? He was fresh and got a sack. So, you know, I'd see the Chiefs doing that, bringing him in, spot playing him in the final, you know, month of the season or so, 2 months of the season.
Unless we had an injury at that position, I would hold him out as long as possible and just prepare him for the playoff run, prepare him for whatever, you know, 3 or 4 games left in the season to kind of get himself back to play, you know, full game throttle. And then once the playoffs hit, just no more pitch count on him. Just, hey, Tamba, let's let it go.
I'm gonna add a little seasoning to this. Would you rather Tamba or the Rover from Villanova?
I would rather the Rover play now, because he's like an innings eater. You know, a pitcher, he comes in and eats some innings up, eats some game time up.
Bring your closer in.
And Tamba is the closer. Tamba is going to be the guy late in the season, playoff, when we really need to play on that field. His presence, his experience will pay off more in the later parts of the season, that fourth quarter of the season in playoff ball, more than it will now.
I mean, if recent seasons are any indication, they'll need him to start, because Houston or Ford is going to be injured, you know, by the time the playoffs get here, because they don't play too many games together before something happens to one of them.
Yeah, really frustrating part about those two guys, because you would imagine that if they were both healthy for a long period of time and could get into some like sync or something or some rhythm, man, the Chiefs pass rush would be good, but it just hasn't happened since D Ford's been drafted. All right, guys, last tweet, maybe the most fun tweet of the day, from Michael Estelle. Is Sean Barber coming out of retirement to help the Chiefs run defense? I'll turn to you first, Jill.
I heard the rumors earlier today, right here in this room, actually, from a source close to Sean, who said if he had to, he could lace them up today, but we'll see.
The answer is no. All right, I'm 6 kids beyond playing football anymore. They get my best. My focus now is purely on parenting to the best of my ability. I'm reading pulls and draws and play action pass and pre-snap reads. I'm trying to pass that on to my oldest son now at my age, and you know, let him. He'll carry on the Barber name, the legacy. He's playing cornerback there, so if he can learn how to cover a 7 route, maybe I'll.
And let's be honest, if Sean Barber was on the Chiefs, you really think Brad G would let him be sitting across from us?
My man, Brad G.
Final words for the Raiders and Chiefs at Sean Barber 59. What do you got?
Oh, man. The final word is take away that soft middle. Attack it. It's the underbelly of the beast. Let's find that, you know, pick up that dragon, pick up that Raider, and see that soft underbelly. And let's go ahead and strike it over and over again. Like I said, if we have a chance to beat him by 30, 40, 50 points, you don't pull off the gas. It's this Raider week. It's a short week. Let's hit them hard, hit them fast, give them everything we got, come out of Oakland with a win, and then rest up and be ready for Monday Night Football.
At Arrowhead Pride, Joel Thorman.
When teams are somewhat evenly matched, which I think the Chiefs and Raiders overall are, you know, go to the coaching matchup, and Andy Reid once again wins that one. I just think he's such a better coach than Jack Del Rio that the Chiefs come out on top on this one.
All right, nothing for me at PG Sween other than I just want to give a shout-out to my boy Philip Rivers for beating the Raiders last week, and, of course, the New York replacements going into Denver and keeping the pace for the Kansas City Chiefs on a day the Chiefs could have lost a lot of ground in the AFC West. They pretty much lost none other than to Los Angeles Chargers, who have a lot of ground to make up, and it's all because of Eli and a lot of names you hadn't heard of going into Denver and beating the Broncos. As far as this game, Sean Barber pointing at my hat, I also need to give another shout-out to the Syracuse Orange.
Yes, yes.
Going in to the Carrier Dome and beating the world champs. If it was professional wrestling, the Syracuse Orange would be the national champions right now. Unfortunately, it's only college football, but very exciting about that. Other than that, listen. Big game Thursday night. Should be a fun night for you guys. It's Chiefs Raiders, Raiders week. For Sean Barber and Joel Thorman, my name is Pete Sweeney, and thank you for listening to the Arrowhead Pride podcast.